Welcome to Single Malt History with Gareth Russell, pouring out your serving of pure, distilled, intoxicating, and occasionally delicious history. We are joined today by author Robert Child, whose book Immortal Valor, the Black Medal of Honor Recipients of World War II, is out in paperback. Focusing on seven recipients of the American Medal of Honor, Immortal Valor has been described as inspiring and valuable by Professor Gregory J.W. Irwin at Temple University, and moving, insightful, meticulous, and detailed by New York Times bestselling author Martin J. Duggard. Rob, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to Single Malt History.
A pleasure to be with you, Gareth. Absolutely.
Well, Rob, to begin with, what drew you to this sort of extraordinary part of American military history?
Well, I had done other time periods, had written about other time periods and done films on this time period. And I did a film a little over 10 years ago called The Wareth 11 that became a book called The Lost 11, which was about Black soldiers in World War II who were massacred in the opening days of the Battle of the Bulge. And in the research for that book, I discovered that there was a treasure trove of history about Black soldiers in World War II that had not been told at all. And I was talking with one of the researchers and historical consultants on the Wareth 11 about doing another project on Black soldiers in World War II. And I said, you know, I really feel like we should start at the top with the Medal of Honor recipients, because there wasn't information on these seven men. There were only a couple. And I said, you know, I'd really like to know who these men were. So it started with curiosity and knowing that there were stories there that, you know, had to be told.
Well, as you say, it focuses on seven American war heroes. Was there, of those seven, maybe a slightly unfair question to ask the author, but was there a particular life from among those seven that really stuck with you?
There were a couple. Two of them stood out. But I want to just reference back, if I could, on the research effort for this book, because it was monumental. Because for some of the recipients, there was no information at all. So, and I actually had to begin at ancestry.com and a couple of genealogy sites to kind of connect the dots to who these men knew, who their friends were, and trace back through different stories to kind of build up their lives from scratch. And a couple of the soldiers did have incredible lives. And getting now back to your question, the soldier, the warrior who stood out to me, they all stand out, but the one who was the super soldier, the incredible super soldier, graces the cover of the book. The one who stands out is Sergeant Edward Carter. And I got to know his daughter-in-law, Aline Carter, very well. And the reason his life stood out is because his parents were missionaries, and they moved to China in the early 1930s. And he, of course, moved with them. And he was in China when the Japanese attacked in 1932. He was living in Shanghai, China, the international settlement. And when they attacked, Edward escaped. They were in a sanctuary, hiding from the bombing, and he escaped and kind of went on his own adventure and joined the Chinese 19th Army to fight against the Japanese Marines who were invading. And his parents were worried sick about him. And it was only a little more than a month later that they discovered that he was in the military. And they arrived at his commander's headquarters and asked if, you know, Eddie was there. He was called Eddie, And they said, yeah, he's been here for a month or more, and he's doing really well. He's up for a promotion to lieutenant. and he said, well, he's only 15. So he's not old enough to join the military. So we're going to take him back home. So he got hauled out of the military by his parents, his father.
Yeah. I have to imagine what that conversation was like at home.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was attending the Shanghai Military Academy. And so he had this natural soldier instinct. And they hauled him back. And he still wanted to fight. That was what, he was drawn to. And later on, when the Italians invaded, I think it was called Abyssinia at the time, he went to the American consulate in, it wasn't a full, diplomatic post, but he asked them if he could join and fight the Italians. And they told him, well, the United States is not at war with the Italians, so he couldn't join.
Small details.
Yeah. So, he was getting older in the teen years, about 18, 19. So they said, well, we can arrange for you to join the Merchant Marines. So he joined the Merchant Marines and learned, shipboard activities and eventually settled back in Los Angeles in the mid, late 30s. But the desire to fight on the front lines was still there. So he started there was no employment during the Great Depression for Black Americans, young Black Americans. There just was not. So he had time on his hands, and he saw Life magazine with the reports from the Spanish Civil War, and he decided he was going to join up. So he used his Merchant Marine contacts and got himself over to Spain and joined the Abraham Lincoln Brigade and fought against Franco for, I think it was 3 or 4 years through 1940, and fought bravely and was wounded. But he came back home in 1940, and everyone knew or had a sense that America was going to join the fight in Europe. And after December 1941, when the Japanese attacked and then Hitler declared war on America, then he saw his chance. But he actually joined up in September of 1941 to fight in World War II, Edward Carter did. And he went to Fort Benning, Georgia in his training. And he was the best soldier they had. He was written up in the Post Gazette as the best marksman they had, but he was in a quartermaster. I don't remember the actual unit, but he was in a quartermaster company where he was pushing a mop. He wasn't firing a gun, and he didn't have any prospects of going over there to fight in combat at the time, because they were not. Black soldiers were not allowed in combat. They were, pushed off to rear echelon, service roles, Red Ball Express, things like that. So he was very frustrated because he was rated as the best marksman, best soldier, best leader of men in camp. So his quartermaster unit ended up shipping off to Europe, France. I don't remember. It was probably early 1942. And in late, after the Battle of the Bulge, Eisenhower decided that we can't keep Black soldiers in rear positions any longer because the attrition in the rifle companies was so great with the white soldiers, the attrition. They had to replace wounded and killed in action. So they opened up after the Battle of the Bulge, rifle companies to Black soldiers. And that's where Edward Carter, he had been petitioning to join combat, where he got his opportunity to train and join the frontline unit, actually the 12th Armored Division, 56th Infantry, I believe. and was one of the early Allied soldiers to enter Germany. It was Patton's Mystery Division, and he entered Germany into unscouted territory. So they were on edge. There were a convoy going into Germany. So he did get his opportunity to go into combat. So I know that's a long story, but I kind of memorized his life.
I mean, it is, and it sort of sets us up just a little bit of what you were talking about. And you've alluded to it before about the, you know, sort of the nature of the research you've had to do. But I think to move to sort of the frustrations and the roadblocks in his career up to and just at the start of the Second World War sort of sets us up nicely for this next question, which is one of the things which really struck me, and I think will readers too, is the extent to which there seemed to be a concerted effort to deny the seven Black Medal of Honor recipients recognition for that honor, despite the medal. And for wider historical context, for our listeners, we do see similar things happening immediately after the Second World War as well in the British Empire, most famously during the royal visit to South Africa in 1947, when there was something very close to a full diplomatic or political incident when King George VI insisted on pinning medals personally onto Black South African war veterans, and his wife, Queen Elizabeth, insisted on shaking those veterans' hands. And that decision by the King and Queen was something which made their pro-apartheid hosts livid. The tensions that this argument provoked in 1940s South Africa have been covered, I should say, very well in some histories of the 47 Royal Tour and histories of the Afrikaans' white nationalist response to Black war veterans. But there did seem to me to be quite a few similarities here to the American experience that you recount and the response to those veterans after the war. But from Immortal Valor, I also think there was a uniquely American set of factors contributing to this wall of silence surrounding the Black Medal of Honor recipients. Can you tell our listeners some of the things that were done and I suppose not done with regards to the seven recipients you wrote about?
Sure. Well, I can put it in context of until the late 80s, no Black soldiers from World War I had been awarded the Medal of Honor either. And it took a great effort by a Black author, Harden Hargrove, to gather evidence and convince the Army Department of Defense that Freddie Stowers deserved the Medal of Honor for his actions in World War I. So that broke the door open to recognizing in the 20th century Black soldiers' service with the Medal of Honor. So that led to the Department of Defense commissioning a study at Shaw University to discover exactly why no Black American soldiers from World War II had been awarded the Medal of Honor as well. In their service, Black soldiers were, they said themselves, treated worse than dogs. Those were their words. They were not recognized for anything. And I've had this question asked many times, why? Why was it that there were Black Medal of Honor recipients in the Civil War, in the Spanish-American War, but why in the 20th century were there no Black Medal of Honor recipients? And it was because in 1925, the Army War College issued a study based on hypothesis that was false, that Black soldiers were cowards, they weren't as intelligent as white soldiers, and that became Army doctrine that commanders followed. And they were reluctant to put them in foxholes or put them in positions where they would be on the front lines. And they were treated very poorly until they got the opportunity to prove themselves when the door was opened by Eisenhower to put them into combat. And white soldiers then saw how brave Black soldiers were, and that the Army War College study was completely false. There was no, you know, there's going to be cowardice on in any race in war. It just happens. But there wasn't a sweeping generalization that all Black soldiers were cowards or not as intelligent. There were, you know, the example of Sergeant Edward Carter. Smart, you know, smart marksman, brave, everything you want. There was also within the military itself, the highest honor for valor is the Medal of Honor. The second highest honor is the Distinguished Service Cross for combat. And Black soldiers who performed up to the requirements of the Medal of Honor, their white commanders knew that they could not recommend them for the Medal of Honor because it would be rejected immediately. It was an unwritten law that was discovered in the Shaw University study. So they always sort of ended up recommending them for the second highest honor, the Distinguished Service Cross. And when the Shaw study was commissioned, their criteria was to investigate Black soldiers who received the Distinguished Service Cross if it should be elevated to the Medal of Honor. So there were no Black soldiers recommended for the Medal of Honor in World War II, except one of the recipients. And that was Reuben Rivers. And it was because his commander, Captain Williams, refused to submit his name for the second highest honor. He submitted him, he told his commander, this man, you know, deserves the highest award and I won't submit him for a second, you know, for the second highest honor. And his commander, David Williams, fought for 50 years to keep his name in contention for the Medal of Honor. And the Shaw study, Reuben Rivers was the only Black soldier out of the seven who had not received the Distinguished Service Cross. He actually received the Silver Star. But David Williams wouldn't quit. and he pestered the, you know, not pestered, but, you know, just insisted that they review Rivers' case. So that was, you know, much to his credit. And actually, Captain Williams was able to attend the Medal of Honor ceremony in Washington, where the seven men received the Medal of Honor. And in an interview with the Baltimore Sun after the ceremony, Captain Williams, his quote, I use at the end of the book, is so wonderful. He says, now justice has been done. God can take me now. I can die in peace. Reuben has received his Medal of Honor. Is that wonderful?
That's just such a, it is a beautiful quote. I mean, it sort of gives you chills when you read it. Well, again, you've set this up perfectly for the next question, Rolf. Thank you. That is because you sort of spoke very briefly there about the American Civil War and the Spanish-American War. And you've written about other famous moments in American history, including the Revolution and the Civil War. In 2013, you wrote Gettysburg, Voices from the Front. And in 2016, you had Washington's Crossing, America's First D-Day. Again, a slightly annoying question for authors, but what are you hoping to write about next?
Actually, you know what's really interesting me, if I can say interesting me, what I'm really interested in now is a time in history, not really warriors, but it's the time of the Christian martyrs before the fourth century, where Christians were being so persecuted by the world, essentially, and the Romans, the Roman Empire. That's a history that I don't think many people know about. It's kind of been shuffled into the past. Oh yeah, there were some people that, you know, died for their faith, but the Christians who were persecuted by Rome were in the thousands. It's incredible. And that story fascinates me because there was so much bravery and so much martyrdom that hasn't been really shown the spotlight on. I know it's not military history.
No, that's not. Had I taken a bet, that is not the answer I would have thought you'd have given. But I totally agree. It is fascinating, and I think this might be me getting something slightly wrong, but I think it's something like that you can count on one hand the number of saints in the Christian calendar for the first 300 or 400 years who died in their beds. It's something tiny like that, because it was just, I'm nearly certain there's only, even one of the 13 apostles is supposed to have died, giving Judas an honorary mention. But one of them, I think it's sort of, used to go into Christian churches, and particularly in the times before they were literate. It's why so many of the statues of the saints are quite grotesque and graphic, because you would recognize them by the artists depicting their martyrdom. Yeah. There's a really gory one in the Vatican of St. Bartholomew, who was skinned alive. And St. Bartholomew holding out his flayed skin.
So,
I think you're right. It's one of those things, it's one of those parts of history that people have heard of. I think many people have heard of, but the actual details of the martyrdoms and the persecutions, I don't think a lot of people knew about.
No, it's just not general knowledge, and it was horrific. And you're right, only one apostle, John, survived not being martyred, and he went on to write the book of Revelations in the late 90s of the first century. But there are incredible stories. There was a bishop of Smyrna. His name was Polycarp.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you know the story.
Polycarp, there's a church very near here, St. Polycarp. And then I don't know if this is planned, but a church that's sort of same denomination and within the same postcode is St. Ignatius. So it's St. Ignatius of Antioch. He was the one who preached and converted Polycarp. So I don't know whether that's intentional, but yeah, St. Polycarp there's a church here.
Yeah, Ignatius in Antioch, that was the first time they were called Christians. That was first use of the term. And Polycarp was fearless, and he was arrested and brought to Rome to be martyred.
My thanks to award-winning author Robert Child, whose critically acclaimed book, Immortal Valor, the Black Medal of Honor Recipients of World War II, is out in paperback and available online and from all good bookstores. Rob, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.